A Chicago startup has a mission of creating custom clothes and helping give back to causes personal to the company and its customers. The co-founders of Stitch and Heart are in our CEO spotlight this morning. Michael Barkin and Bill Burnett are here. Michael, Bill, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
We're happy you're here because this is sort of an exciting new thing that's going on, and it's relatively new for you guys, even though you've been around for 8 or 9 months or so. I want to start first by talking about the company and what you have built here, and I want to give you kind of both a chance to go forward on that question. How about, Bill, we start with you?
Great. Yeah, thank you. So, as you said, we started Stitch and Heart about 8 months ago. Really, the idea behind creating the company all was rooted in social impact. We wanted to create something, a brand that built into the core, the DNA, the culture of the business was really around giving back first. And so that really sets back for me a personal story. So a few years ago, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And so as we were going through this, you know, very personal battle, just saw the different people that it impacts and going through something brand new for myself. Professionally, I just exited my company. I had a company in Chicago that we sold to LinkedIn. And so I sat down with Michael and said, I'd really love to think about what could be next. What could we do where it's really about giving? Michael comes from the clothing industry. So we struck just a conversation around what about a very personalized menswear company all around custom that gives back to the causes that matter most to the men, the customers shopping with us. And ultimately, that was our kickoff point. And then from there, we took it.
Bill, the idea of giving back is one that the new generation of consumers really loves to be a part of. But the other part of this is the clothes are important, too, and that's where your expertise comes in.
Yeah, I mean, people care, right? And so I've spent the last 16 years of my life in and around this clothing business in a few different parts. Most recently was part of a company called Trunk Club that we successfully exited to Nordstrom back in 2014. And so got a chance to really be involved with growing big teams, building big-ish size businesses. But the reality of the clothing space is it's small, right? Like our industry, the custom aspect of what we do anyway, is about a $1 billion industry. And so if you look at that, you know, all these people playing in the space, they're basically the same. And so what we tried to do and what we're deciding to do is really approach it from a totally different angle. Yeah, we'll make amazing clothes, but we'll make amazing clothes and also do good with it. And so our approach to the whole thing is let's find out what matters to individuals. We can personalize every single part of the clothing process, but we also want to personalize how the dollars flow through. And our take on it, and because of Billy's, you know, personal experience, and we're close best friends from growing up, he was going through something that really set this thing off, right? And so we got together. We said, let's approach it. Let's go after this thing together, and we can make an impact on the human side through selling luxury product. And that really resonated with us both.
I want to walk through the process a little bit and kind of give our listeners as much of a visual on this as we possibly can. Bill, when somebody decides they want to come in and get fitted and get clothes, what's the start and end of the process?
Sure. So I think if you think about it as a custom business, customer is going to come in to our office. They're going to learn a little bit about, you know, what we do, what kind of clothes we play in. More importantly, we're going to learn about them. How do they wear clothes? You know, where do clothes fit into their lifestyle? Are they wearing more casual on the weekends? Are they dressing up more professionally for work? So we get a real understanding of that customer. At that point, then we'll start introducing, you know, what can we make for them? What fits? What works? At the same time, they're learning about our company, our culture, and that it's not just about what you wear, but it's about giving back. It's about supporting the causes that matter most. And so we take them through a little narrative around like why we got started and the different causes that we support, which for us right now, we're supporting all of the different cancer fighting causes. And we have two great partners. We have Anthony Rizzo Foundation and the American Cancer Society, where we do all of our funding through. And so a customer will understand a little bit about the causes. Ultimately, and I'm fast forward a little bit, they'll get measured. We do custom fit, so everything's going to be dialed in to a perfect fit for that individual, and then they'll shop. And after the shopping experience, when we make the clothes for them, we'll actually sew in a custom label that will indicate the cause that they're supporting.
Michael, how important is this custom fit aspect to clothing these days?
Yeah, I mean, custom, obvious, it's important, you know, relative to the individual. But all I'd say about it, the main thing is that for the dollars that people are spending now on nicer clothing, you can have things made for those same prices specifically for you. And so there's this question really that the consumer has to go through, which is I can either buy things that have been made for the masses, or I could spend those same dollars and buy things that were specifically made for me. And so what we're seeing happen a lot anyway in the clothing space is that this brand loyalty, or, you know, the focus on these luxury brands that are taking a lot of your dollars and allocating them towards marketing, people are being less loyal to those types of things in general and focusing more on the actual quality of things for them individually. And so we see that movement happening. I also want to note, like, experientially, how the process works when people come in, it's really different for every customer. And so while we might have an idea of how we want a customer appointment to go, every individual is really different. And so we'll have guys that come in that say, look, I have an idea of what I want. Go execute on it, right? And so they give us the full rein to do that. There are some people that come in and say, I very specifically know exactly what I want, and then it's our job to go out and source and create for them. And so the point of the whole thing is, like, it really depends on who you are. And so we spend a lot of time understanding, you know, what matters to you as a person, and then let's create an experience that we can tailor specifically for you.
I saw, it sort of came off the webpage at me when I was researching for today's interview, the idea that I can bring in something from my own closet and show you to give you an idea of what I like. I love that idea.
Yeah, I think there's a huge opportunity in there. You know, one of the things that gets me really excited about that is we would call it, like, maybe replication, right? We don't really have a formal name for it right now, but the idea is that we want to understand from a guy's perspective, what are the things they love the most? And most guys, if you look in their closet, they've got maybe 15% of things that they really spend a lot of time wearing. And they love those things because of how they fit. Maybe the color makes them feel good, but in general, it has to do with fit. And so our perspective is, if we took that garment and we're able to replicate it over and over and over again in that exact same fit, a guy might actually have a wardrobe that he wears 100% of instead of just 20%. Mm-hmm. And so we're running this program right now. We're testing it. It's very early. But what we're doing is saying to a guy, bring in your favorite shirt, bring in your favorite jacket, bring in your favorite pant. We'll reverse pattern that whole thing and then create a profile for you so that every fabric you order from us going forward, we can make in that exact same style.
Yeah, because I think we've all been in a situation where we find a shirt that feels it's the best quality. It's soft or it's worn or something like that. And we're like, how can we replicate that? I've been in that situation many, many times.
Yep. You know, and so the inputs are like, you know, what's it made of? And then how's it actually constructed? And so every person's different. If for you, it's the softness, great, let's go source fabric that feels similar to that or maybe comes from the exact same mill. If it's fit, let's understand what the fit about it is that's special for you. Is it how an armhole fits? Is it the shape of the sleeve? Is it the length of a shirt? Whatever the things are for you, we can replicate that stuff. And that is the beauty of what custom is. We start from zero and we build from the ground up.
Bill, this sounds very expensive. And I'm putting myself in the place of our listener this morning who's probably saying, this sounds pretty expensive. Is it?
It, you know, it doesn't need to be. We'll say that. You know, I think clothing in general has a range. You can be at the top of that range. So, you know, Michael can speak to this in more detail, but I'll say that, you know, our starting price points are going to be in the same range of going into a store. The idea is that custom doesn't need to be more expensive than walking into a store. The idea of custom is just what Michael said, which is it's made for you. Mm-hmm. The quality, the fit, everything we're talking about here, made for you at affordable pricing. Certainly, you can source different materials, different fabrics. You could play at a budget range that's more appetizing to you. But we have entry-level pricing for all of our garments.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the whole clothing community and what's available, in general, it's expensive, right? Like, let's call a spade.
Yeah, it is.
It's expensive. Our shirts start at $150, and they go up from there. Our jackets start at $500. Our suits start at $700. And so it's not cheap, but it's also not at the northern end of what it could be. And so I think it's important for over the last 16 years for me, I've seen shirts that cost $800. I personally don't think there's any value in that. And so we choose to not play in that level of things. On the same side for suiting, we've seen options that go as high as $10,000, $6,000. Those aren't things that, to me, have a ton of value. But again, individuals, there may be some people out there who say, you know what, I really want that stuff. Great, we can source it. But it's not where we put our stake in the ground, right? Our whole goal is to say, what's happening at a store like maybe Nordstrom? You know, premium type level, premium type experience. We can compete with that. And instead of, again, having to buy things that everybody else can buy, we can take those same types of products, build them specific for you for at or even better pricing.
There's also an idea that you're saving, consumer is saving on the headache and the price and the cost of having to go to multiple places to find something that fits, that you like. The traveling around from store to store, the sending back sizes that don't fit if you buy online. If you put all of that stuff together, that's probably a big savings alone just with that.
Yeah, I think our approach to the whole thing is we can't possibly be marketing ourselves to every person on earth, right? We sell to people who have a tax on time, who believe in this outsourced community or outsourcing their life. And in the world that we live in today, everybody wants to believe they're busier than they've ever been. And so if they can outsource something like clothing choices, then we're here to help them do that, right? It is a painstaking process for most guys to have to look at their closet each morning and say, what on earth am I going to wear today, yeah. Right? Every guy on earth can understand that. And so we're looking at that saying, we can help solve that, right? The reason it's painful to look at your closet is because most of the stuff you don't feel as great in as you do for other parts. And we're trying to make that different. We're trying to say, let's make everything for you feel great.
I think important to that too is that custom doesn't need to be formal. I think, you know, in the mindset of many, when you think of custom, you know, menswear, you're thinking about suiting or a tuxedo. And for us, custom is not formal, not casual. It's everywhere in between. And so that we found has been really important to our clientele coming in, that they get this experience around being measured, getting that really dialed in fit, as Michael said, you know, instead of having to think about what to wear or this fits really well, I like it, I don't even know why, so I keep going back to the same items in my closet. Mm-hmm. We're going to help you build an entire wardrobe, an entire closet around those best fitting items. But some of them are going to be, you know, shirts that you're wearing untucked with jeans. You're going to wear sneakers. You're going to wear a polo. You're also going to wear that suit, that tuxedo, et cetera.
Stitch and Heart started in September of 2018.
Correct.
What have been the challenges, Bill, going forward? What have you experienced over the last few months?
I guess like any startup, right, there's many challenges. I would say, you know, and both of us come from startups, you know, it's always, whenever you're starting something brand new, everything is around acquisition, customers. And in a brand new business, you're not throwing tons of money into marketing. You don't have the same dollars as many of the incumbents in the space have. So I think, you know, like first and foremost to me, I think about just awareness, you know, getting in front of as many people as possible. We've been fortunate with our backgrounds to hire just an amazing, amazing team. And so that helps a ton. Like we've gotten, you know, great talent from day one. But just getting more in front of more people, I would say, is the biggest challenge.
Michael, you back to your experience, you've been through some of this before, so I bet you that helps.
It's certainly helpful to have the context. I think there's this recency bias where, you know, my last job when I left there, we had a sales team of, I think, like 600 people performing at a pretty reliable rate, right? And so you trade that out for a team where now we have, when we started, 2 salespeople and very unpredictable revenue streams. And so for us, like, you know, at least the way I think about it, the biggest pain point or area of stress or difficulty is really around just looking at revenue every day. And so for us in the early stage that we're in, literally every dollar counts, every transaction matters. And that hunt, that grind is something that we love. It's one of the reasons we do this, because we're addicted to the process of trying to build. But it is difficult. The emotional volatility that you go through and having to look at your daily sales report. You know, there are days when you feel invincible. And then there are hours or days where you feel like, you know, you wonder what the heck you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's good. Like, yeah. That's why we're doing it, right?
How does being coming into this, being friends, hurt or help the process?
Hopefully help, you know.
Hopefully.
Especially we're both sitting here right now. So far it's going well. No, I think, you know, it's always unique when you're able to do something with someone you're so close with. So I think, like, both of us went into it understanding that, you know, business is hard and there are going to be challenges in the business, and there's certainly going to be, you know, additional challenges that we haven't hit yet. But I think, you know, for us, it's been a really, really amazing experience to get to do something that, you know, we're both so passionate about. We feel good every day waking up knowing that while we created this business to, you know, outfit people, and it is a for-profit company, there is a component to it that gives back every day. So from our first transaction, we were giving money back. We've donated over $50,000 in our first, you know, 8 months back to the cancer fighting causes. So to feel personally so rooted in that experience and be able to do that with, you know, one of my best friends is obviously, you know, a very cool moment.
What does growth look like? What will that be? How will it shape up for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is part of what startup is, right? I think our idea of what growth looks like today will probably be very different than what it looks like 6 months from now. I think the way that we're focusing on it right now is, you know, we believe that one of the ways that we will scale this company is through what we might call a mobile seller network, right? And so if you look at the people out there who are searching for, you know, income, there are a lot of people who want autonomous work lives, right? And we've seen this in the gig economy. The generation right now that is, you know, all over the place, that's making real waves, really wants to have social impact, right? So we've got autonomous work life, we've got social impact, and then people love consumer goods. And so in consumer goods, what's happening right now is personalization is everywhere. And so that plays to our advantage, and that custom is the ultimate in personalization. And so I think, you know, the way that while we do have, yes, two unbelievable full-time salespeople, and we will hire more of those people, it'll be a combination of full-time professionals who really understand the clothing space and have great networks and can go get those guys to become customers and support the business. That will be coupled with this mobile model who, you know, we can offer this to all over the place, all over the country, not just in Chicago, and have them be, you know, people who are making impact in their communities, selling amazing product to their network of people, and then have the autonomy to kind of work when they want to.
I wanted to ask you how the changing workforce and what we all wear and dress. There was recently a story that one of the big Wall Street firms said you don't have to wear suits and ties anymore. This is kind of cool, right? I mean, people are wearing more casual clothing. Does that help or hurt your business?
Again, for us, it's helpful in the sense that launching the business from the onset, it wasn't about, you know, one type of garment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about catering to individuals that wear suits and ties every day to work. You know, as we're sitting here, right, like, you know, I'm wearing, jeans and a shirt here untucked. That's what I wear. We built the business around catering to casual individuals and professional. And again, I know we've said this a few times, but it really goes back to the point that it's about learning who you are as an individual. Not every sale is going to be the same. Not everybody's going to wear the same types of clothes. Even within the types of clothes, everyone's going to, you know, design differently and likes different, you know, fabric choices, etc. So like for us, like it's not a, you know, positive or negative. I mean, wherever it shifts, we're able to, you know, solve that need.
What's cool about that is, you know, guys are going to wear clothes kind of always, right? We have to wear clothes.
Right.
Our society mandates it.
Hopefully.
Hopefully we have to wear clothes. But, you know, we were talking about that article yesterday when it came out, and my first response to Billy when he sent it to me was, that article has been coming out for 16 years every year, literally, right? And so when I started in this business in 2003, it was the same thing. Oh, the world's moving more casual. Okay, great. You know, so people are still going to put on clothes, and so we can make them ground up. To Billy's point, whether it's really casual stuff or very formal, we can accommodate it. After the crash in 08 and in 09, the whole economic world was saying, oh, everybody's going back to more formal because they're worried for their job, so they have to come up and look more professional. So they won't wear flashy stuff, but they're going to wear a suit and a basic white shirt and a blue shirt. Okay, great. We can respond to all of that, right? It's just clothes.
How does being in the Chicago market help your company?
We're rooted in Chicago. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, building a business, I think, you know, this type of business, I think, can be, you know, national, certainly, but in Chicago, our backgrounds are in Chicago. Both Michael and I were part of startups in Chicago. So I think just naturally our networks are here. And for a business like ours, really getting out of the gates, not putting a lot of emphasis yet into marketing or big models, you know, around growth nationally yet, having those networks is like super important. That's what we're tapping into to, you know, iterate on product market fit, get people in, get people to, you know, give us good feedback on the experience, et cetera. So for all those reasons, that's why, you know, in my opinion, why Chicago means so much to starting.
And then also, like, Chicago is a city. It's not a fanciful place. You know, people are just real, and they want to help. Like, Chicago, I think, as a city, has empathy for people trying to do things different. And so as a startup community, it's not the West Coast, and it's not the East Coast. It's this own little pocket. And so I think when people go out and try to do something, the city kind of wraps around it and says, really cool, we're rooting for you. Right. And so while we both grew up here and that is super helpful and all our networks are also here, we also have the benefit of a city who kind of appreciates effort.
I ask sometimes if there's been an aha moment in your company. And I know, Bill, you talked about your experience with cancer, your family's experience with cancer. I want to ask each of you about that, whether there's been a moment, if that's the moment. And maybe we can start with you, Bill.
Sure. You know, certainly that was the moment that, you know, I guess changed everything for me, just changed, you know, the way I looked at, you know, everything in my life, personally, professionally, and then coupled with the fact that, you know, I had, you know, I was able to start thinking about what might be next. That created the conversation that started and launched everything. I would say, you know, like a collection of maybe aha moments that then, you know, that resonate with me are that once we launched, once we had customers, vendors that we were talking to, it was really special on how many people then would start telling their own stories. Oh, wow, this is why this resonates with me. So you just started getting these people talking about, you know, life experiences. And, you know, that was the collection for me of like thinking about all of those and these aha moments around, you know, we are doing something special. There is a connection in giving back. And when we can get people talking about, you know, what matters to them in a shopping experience, that's pretty cool.
Michael?
Yeah, I think for me, kind of the aha moment, if we go back to before we even formally started the company, you know, one of my own insecurities around what I had done in my career is, you know, I've always been in luxury clothing. And so at the end of the day, you're selling expensive things to people who can afford them, right? You're selling expensive things to rich people. And so that's fun. I loved it. I still do love it, you know, working with that level of customer, et cetera. But one of the insecurities was always around, could I be doing more, right? Like when it's all said and done for all of us, we want to be able to say like we made a difference, we made an impact. And so I personally have always wished for and hoped for that if one day I can afford to be involved in a business that has giving rooted into its DNA, that's interesting. And so when Billy came in and brought this up to me, we weren't really sure that custom clothing was the way that we were going to approach it. It just happened to be that that's where my background existed. And so it was in a lot of ways like path of least resistance. We can get out of the gate quick because I know the supply chain world. We can start building clothes. And so one thing led to another. And the aha moment for me was like, okay, this is my chance. I could still stay in the space. I could also work with one of my best friends and I can be involved in giving. That's neat.
Well, guys, it's wonderful that you guys came in today. It's good meeting you. All the best, everybody at Stitch and Heart, and please keep us up to date on how things are going.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Michael Barkin and Bill Burnett, co-founders of Stitch and Heart in Chicago. You can find them online at stitchandheart.com. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell this morning and post more of our interview in the podcast of The Opening Bell at WGNRadio.com a little bit later on this morning.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Our attention now turns to the business of climate and weather. Argonne National Laboratory in Lamont helping keep companies running and communities safe by preparing for the worst, helping prepare for the worst. Scientists at Argonne working with AT&T on a climate resiliency project to help AT&T better anticipate, prepare for, and adapt to the impacts of climate change and extreme weather events. We're happy to have with us this morning Dr. Rao Kotamarti, who is chief scientist and department head at atmospheric science and climate at Argonne National Laboratory. Dr. Cotamarchi, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell. Well, we're having a phone problem here. Let's see if we can get the line clicked in here the right way. Dr. Cotamarchi, good morning. Welcome. We apologize for our technical problems this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
We could use some scientists from Argonne this morning on our tech issues, but we appreciate your patience and everybody listening this morning. This is an exciting story, and we want to talk to you about it because the idea that we're able to now look into the future, have a crystal ball, as it were, to look and see where extreme weather may be in the future to give companies now planning ideas. Talk to us about what you're doing there at Argonne.
Yeah. I think I would start by giving a little context for all this activity, if you don't mind. So if you look at all the climate change activities going on around the world, you can kind of split that into three activities. One is the policy side. The second one is the mitigation side. By mitigation, you mean various ways of technology development that curbs carbon, like using wind, solar, and carbon capture. And the third one goes under the heading of adaptation. So what we did is actually under this heading called adaptation. People from international agencies down to cities are trying to develop adaptation plans. And in the U.S., the best adaptation plans are actually in California. The state of California and various cities there have pretty good adaptation plans that they have developed for changing climate facing. So the idea of adaptation is that you somehow estimate the risk from changing climate, and you develop resiliency plans to adapt to it. So that's how the risk and resiliency comes under this adaptation. So as you know, a lot of the commercial private sector is facing some pressure from stockholders that the company should have some kind of idea of what the climate risk is and develop resiliency plans for that. So our activity, the AT&T, falls under this category. So what we are trying to do is, of course, it is pretty, the uncertainty in climate projections when going to the future is pretty large. I mean, large in the sense that compared to the weather forecast for tomorrow, when you're trying to forecast, project the climate change into the mid-century, there are uncertainties. Primarily, the uncertainties come from not knowing what the carbon emissions are going to be. So the idea here is to develop an envelope of possible risk, and then using that risk estimates, develop maybe a possibility of developing resiliency plans. So we are helping AT&T in this activity.
And it's kind of cool because you're looking really, as you mentioned, mid-century. So that would be like 30 or 40, 50 years into the future. You're able to tell AT&T what, where to put its infrastructure, where not to put its infrastructure. What kinds of things are you telling them?
So that's one of the big challenges working with private sector is that they generally have vision, their operation, business plans, everything is from maybe maximum 5 years. So they are not looking beyond that. So then the interesting thing working with AT&T is that we worked pretty hard for the first month to figure out what they actually perceive to be the risk from changing climate to their operations and and various other things. So finally, we came to the conclusion that the best thing probably we can help them is actually trying to figure out what risk their infrastructure will face by mid-century, because that has from now to mid-century, because that has a longer-term investment from their portfolio. So the idea here is, we came to the conclusion that the two things they are interested in a changing climate is flooding, and the second one is strong winds. So that took a while for us to come together on that. Once we decided on that, there is a 4 feet of, when you get a flood now, once every 10-year flood, you get 4 feet of water. Would that be 8 feet in the future, or it will be 2 feet in the future? So what is the probability of going either higher or lower? So we did a whole bunch of calculations to estimate those kinds of numbers for them. Which way will it turn, and what by how much? So the idea here is that you have some idea. Of course, there are uncertainties associated with these numbers, but you can see what is a peak flooding value for a grid cell. By grid cell, I mean we did the calculations on about 200-meter size cells all along the southeast. And same thing for the wind. What would if you right, once a year you get a 40 meter per second wind field, will it be 50 meters per second in the future, or it will be 30 meters per second? So these are the kinds of numbers we generated for them, and then it gives them an idea of which way things will go in the future along the southeast.
Yeah, and the idea that you're able to zoom in to focus in on the southeast, that's sort of the strength of what you and your colleagues are doing at Argonne, and that is using the supercomputer to focus in on these smaller areas. So you have a better probability that the odds are better on what you're forecasting?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big deals. I mean, for the calculations we did for AT&T, because we have the computing facilities, it's probably around 60 to 80 million core hours of computing time that we used. Even then, we kind of used maybe less than 10 different variations of the model. These models take quite a long time to calculate because we are running at the very, as you said, at very high spatial resolution. Ideally, what I would like to do is I would like to run hundreds of these variations of the model to get a better idea of the uncertainty envelope and better estimate of the risk. Right now, we cannot do that. If I want to do more than 100 of these simulations, you almost need a billion hours of computing time. That probably becomes feasible in the future because we are going to get an exascale computer. But more likely what we would be doing over the next few years is that combining the methods we have used now with things like machine learning to reduce the amount of time that it takes to run these variations of the model so we can get a better idea of the error, the uncertainty in what we project into the future. So I would ideally like to run, like, well, for example, a lot of people have investments in their retirement accounts. So you look at a small tool on the web, you click, and it gives you the spaghetti plot. Says, this is uncertainty on your future projected earnings or savings. Right? I mean, that's a fairly quick calculation. It's a Monte Carlo calculation, simple mathematical equation. But we would like to do those thousands of hundreds of future forecasts. So the company like AT&T can have better estimate of the risk, of uncertainty in the risk we are producing. Right now, this is the first baby step of trying to figure out how a commercial company can actually think about these things, and I'm pretty excited that the private sector is starting to think about this, and this has been one of the things that we constantly think about, how to work with private sector to figure out what they would be interested in thinking about future and how we may be able to help them.
Yeah, and the cost part of this too. I mean, if you're able to tell a company where to build, where not to build, where to build roads, a city, how to prepare for a heat wave, those kinds of things, you could save not only lives but potentially billions of dollars in related damage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the interesting thing, right? If you can even start thinking about these things right now, most of the infrastructure investment, for example, may have horizons of 30 to 50 years. You're building something, you have an idea that this is going to last for at least 30, 40 years. So mid-century is not that far off. So your investments into the mid-century probably should take climate change into consideration having a resilient infrastructure and thinking about these things so that you're not betting money on places where things could be changing much more drastically than that. Are these projections a definite yes or no? That's not true for any kind of modeling. What you can do is you can play with a range of possibilities so you can have an idea what the risk is and take your bets on the risk. I mean, if you still feel that you want to put something somewhere where it is risky, and you know the odds of what could happen. So these are the kinds of things that possible right now, and I think is probably very useful to industry to think about these things.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. This is very exciting, and we're going to stay tuned here and watch what Argonne does as we move into the future. And I think everybody's excited too about getting that new supercomputer to move forward as well. Yep. Dr. Cotamardi, thank you for being with us this morning.
Yep, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Dr. Rao Cotamardi, Chief Scientist and Department Head of Atmospheric Science and Climate at Argonne National Laboratory in Lamont. You can find more at ANL.gov. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We're beginning to get more information on how many acres have been impacted by the floods so far this year. Nearly 1.1 million acres of cropland and more than 84,000 acres of pasture land in the Midwest had flood water on it for at least 7 days between March 8th and March 21st. And in the markets, we're going to see if we can overcome that big drop in corn prices last Friday, down 17 and a quarter cents a bushel, and the soybean contract down 5 and a half cents a bushel. Wheat dropped 5 and a quarter cents a bushel on Friday. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk for this morning. Dow futures up nearly 178 points, more than a half a percent as we head to the opening bell a little bit later this morning. NASDAQ futures up nearly a percent, and S&P futures are up more than a half a percent. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, April the 1st, retail sales for February are due out. Retail analysts see sales slowing a bit. After January's 0.9% surge, retail sales are forecast to gain 0.4% in February. The manufacturing index for March comes out today. The experts are calling for a slight gain over February.